Taking a look now at your personal computer with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad you're listening in. And if you have a question for Pete today about your computer or the software, I hope you'll join us. And the number is 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. And Pete, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Always great, Larry.
We have Microsoft now released its test version of Windows 7, and Walter Mossberg had a column on it in the Wall Street Journal, and says it's a pleasure to use. Basically, it's a fix of Vista's main flaws.
Which means they should be not selling it, but rather giving it away as an update. But that probably won't happen.
Yeah.
So that I guess in the whole process of things, that's the frustrating part is, you know, looking at going from XP to Vista and the issues with it. And we've, you know, whoever's watched TV and seen ads, you know, Apple versus Mac and the humor side of it, excuse me. But the reality is that was Vista released prematurely? You know, they're always fixing problems. We've always talked about, you know, going from one version to another, how they fixed so many different flaws and bugs and
right.
so forth. But in terms of, I would say the down experience of, you know, Vista, that they really, you know, if they're charging for an upgrade, it should be for simply the media and the packaging. It shouldn't, I mean, in my opinion.
Yeah,
I know that's not going to happen, but the reality is that they probably released Vista prematurely and should have had more fixes that they have in, you know, Windows 7 now to make the end user experience better.
Yeah.
That's the frustrating part of it. I'm glad they've worked on fixing, you know, the different issues, but, you know, it's we've been like kind of a giant beta for them.
Yeah.
With Vista.
And we paid for it.
Correct.
No.
So I think we should not be paying for it. That's just an opinion I've heard from others and myself included.
Well, in the meantime, while we wait to see if we're going to get that, which is probably isn't going to happen, let's go to John in Milwaukee who's got a question for you. John, hi.
Hi. I've got XP Professional, and I was having a problem with the sleep mode. I've got it set up where I can click on start and shut down and then say go to sleep, and it'll sleep okay, and I see that a fan actually goes off on the CPU, and it'll sleep all night without waking up, and I can bring it back out, and everything's hunky-dory. And then I tried to set it up so that if the computer, keyboard, and the mouse, and nothing's active for half an hour or an hour, that it should automatically go into the sleep mode. But it doesn't seem to want to go into the sleep mode at all. So I'm sure there's something that's keeping it from going into the sleep mode. And I was wondering if there are any tools out there that I can use to look at and tell me what is it? Is it a packet coming in over the internet, or is it what specifically is keeping it from going into the sleep mode when I have it set like that?
Well, you raised some good questions in terms of is there anything active going on. If you have any kind of applications that are running in the background, you know, that can run interference.
But it'll go to sleep when I tell it to go to sleep, even if I have the same background applications running. That's why I'm curious as to I can force it to go to sleep just by saying go into the sleep mode from the start button, but it won't go into the sleep mode by itself if there's no activity on the keyboard or mouse.
Right. My guess on that is either it's a just a flaw with, you know, the OS in terms of its interaction with your system, and, you know, you're forcing it and saying, hey, go to sleep, versus leaving it on its own and it can't do that. The other thing is you might be able to find an answer if you go to, I don't know if you've ever used Microsoft's knowledge base.
Uh-huh.
But you can do a search on through if you looked up Microsoft Knowledge Base, if you did a search on that off of my InfoStar Virus Info Center page, I have it as MSK Base. but you know, just a link to it. But what you can do is search through their tech resource based on any version of their operating system, and you know, just put in, you know, in a question line, you know, sleep or hibernation problem, and see what links you get. Sometimes they acknowledge that there are fixes to it, or they may tell you that there's something else that you have to turn off or on within the control panel that's running interference.
So that's probably the quick way to get that resolved.
Right.
Yeah. Good luck. Thanks for calling, John. Appreciate it. Gordy in Eau Claire, we're on to you now. Hi, Gordy.
Good morning. I have a email. I believe it's a settings question. I used to think it was an etiquette question. When I send an email through Outlook Express, occasionally for business, I want to attach a sender requests a receipt. It's under the tools section.
Yep.
And I have several people that we exchange emails using that setting. The when I receive it, it's a box right in the middle of my email, and you have to click yes or no.
Correct.
But I am finding more often that people are not even receiving that receipt. Is there a setting in computers that can turn that off as a from the receiving end, or do virus control programs cut that out? Why is it not coming up on other people's computers?
That's a good question. I know exactly what you're doing, because I usually, what I'll do is I'll say no, that I'm not replying to that, because I typically reply to the message with more detail.
Sure, and that's acceptable.
Right.
That's fine.
Right. But what you're saying is that the people that you're sending the email out to are actually not getting the initiation of, you know, can you just send me back an email that you've received this?
I've actually, there was a period of time where I thought, oh, people just weren't paying attention.
Right.
But I've actually sent it from my home computer to my computer at work, which mm-hmm. is also a Microsoft computer, and sent the receipt. And when I went to work the next day, my email was there as a test, but the little receipt window was not there.
Hmm. Okay, so you know that people aren't just ignoring it,
right?
Exactly. People apparently, I thought it was I thought it was an etiquette question, because I thought people were being rude and not clicking yes, you know, to acknowledge the receipt of the email.
Well, I think what you've just found is a, I don't want to call it a loophole, but you know, a hole in their system, in terms of there must be something that's blocking, either blocking that from coming in on certain systems, in a sense, almost like an incompatibility. Because, you know, when you think about it, the message that you're sending is, you know, a full email with content, but piggybacking along is this little script that's saying, you know, now that you've received my email, you know, the sender wants to know, did you get it? You know, yes or no. And so it sounds to me like there's some kind of script incompatibility on some of the recipient systems, so it's just not making it to them. Or it's not, it's almost like it's turned off.
Would it be, could it be some sort of virus control mechanism that is?
It's possible. It's possible there are some, you know, there are a lot of different antivirus programs that are out there, and there are a lot of different versions even from the same manufacturer. So it's possible that with the people that you're emailing to, that there could be a group of them that have the same antivirus, and the functionality, in effect, is turning that off without anyone even realizing it. So, and unless the manufacturer of those programs, you know, and this is speculation, but unless they hear back from someone like you that's saying, hey, I have a group of 10 people and only six of them are getting this kind of, you know, acknowledgement, how are they ever going to know that that feature is being knocked out by their software?
I find it a useful feature because I know people have sent me emails when I had my computer in for either updating or repair or some sort of servicing.
Right.
And I guess I tend to be a skeptical person and never just assume that just because I sent an email, someone received it.
Absolutely.
And for friends, you typically don't care. But mm-hmm. in a business situation where you're trying to go back and forth, say, prices for a product or something,
yeah. right.
you want to know that that person just got your latest pricing update, and it's probably a question that they need to respond to. And if mm-hmm. they're not getting that receipt, then you just have no idea that they got it.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
I wish I had a quick and easy fix for you, and if someone was listening, you know, and has been through the same thing and found it, but, you know, it's almost like you have to go around and pull the people that you're sending those kind of emails out to find out, number one, are they getting that to pop up on their screen, you know, to reply yes or no, and then also, you know, what do they have on their system, you know, that maybe running interference. You know, you have to go through a series of questions and say, what are you using for this, for browser? What are you using for email? What are you using for antivirus? What operating system are you using? So that you can basically arm yourself to go, you know, it's like a puzzle, you know, trying to figure out what's the actual responsible party.
Good luck.
It's a challenge.
Yeah, good luck, Gordy. Thanks for calling. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking computers with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, Larry Mueller here. Let's go right back to the phones and to Kathy in Fifield, who I think has a question for you, Pete. Hi, Kathy.
Hello, Pete. I have a Dell Inspiron 530 with Vista Home Premium. And when I start my computer, I get the error message, you are running out of disk space on recovery D, that I don't have enough space for a backup, but that I do need to back up my files. Now, I got two different kinds of advice from Dell technicians. A first one, access my computer and deleted old backup files. And then when the problem came up again, another technician said I should buy an external hard drive. What do you think?
Okay. Well, it sounds to me like you need some file management to, you know, clean up some space. How old's the system?
It's just a little over a year old, and I really don't have a lot on it. I don't have much software.
Right.
I have maybe 100 photos, maybe 15 minutes of video, no mm-hmm. music, so mm-hmm. it's not really loaded up.
Okay.
3 gigabytes of RAM,
right,
and 298 gigabytes on the hard disk.
Right. Okay. Well, let's see. One thing that you can do is: are you familiar with? Do you have your system set up for system restore?
I never did that, so I know there is a system restore,
right.
but I never went in and did anything with it.
Okay. Well, one of the things, there's a couple of areas that you can resize so that your space on your system is being used more efficiently.
Okay.
One is if you right mouse click on your recycle bin and,
mm-hmm.
and go to properties, the default is to use about 10% of your space for the recycle bin. So that will free up some space.
Cut that back to...
to probably about 1%.
Let's see. I'm there right now, and it mm-hmm. says, okay. I just don't see custom size. I'm looking to see where I could cut it back. I'm looking at that screen right now.
Actually, you could do custom size.
Okay. All right. And there's a number there. It says 16,795.
Right.
And is that where I would make a change?
Correct.
And, yep. And what would I change it to?
Boy, you know, you have a 300 gig hard drive. You know, even one gig of space is more than enough.
So what should that number be, though?
So if you change it from 16 to 1, that would be fine.
So from 16,795 just to the number 1?
No, to 1,000.
1,000.
1,000 rather than 16,000.
Right.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
I don't want to get into making the answer really long on the air, but I'm just going to tell you some things to go through and check rather than having us interact while you're checking on your system. One is to make sure that setting, and you'll have to look around in there, but you want to do it for all your drives, okay? Because it sounds to me like you have it, your C drive is your main hard drive.
Right.
And it's also telling you that you mentioned your recovery drive, which is drive D.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's typically a smaller partition that has been set up for that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do it dynamically for all your drives, so it's resized, you're going
to... So I should resize all drives to 1,000?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. So that's one thing. The other thing is... if you go into System Restore, and that would be found through Accessories and System Tools and System Restore, what you want to do is change your System Restore settings so that you can, the default, again, is about 12% of space. So you want to change
the 12%
of 12% of your hard drive space. So again, we're looking at like, you know, 30-plus gigabytes because, you know, 10% of 300 is 30, all right?
Okay.
So that's a huge amount of space. So, again, what you can do is resize the space that's used for System Restore.
Okay.
All right, to do that. And if if you're brave enough to do this, another setting within System Restore that will clean up some of the space that you've already used is to turn it off and then to turn it back on again. So turn System Restore off, shut down your computer, bring it back up, and then turn it back on. And what will happen is when you tell it to turn it off, it will eliminate prior restore points, and it sounds that you have a lot of space that's being used up on both drives for all the restore points that you have. Okay.
So they're just making the computer is establishing restore points on its own, basically.
Correct. So that's a way to free up a lot of space. The other thing is because your recovery drive D somehow is being pointed to for some, it sounds like some backup functions that you're doing, and that it's being selected versus you should be really using some kind of external thumb drive or, you know, a hard drive like someone recommended for backups, because what you're doing is you're backing up your data files from your main C drive to your D drive, and there's really not a lot of space for that.
It may
seem like it, but between the recycle bin eating up some space and the System Restore points eating up space, all of a sudden space is at a premium, and you're trying to pump, you know, backup data to it, and you're exhausting it. And then on top of that, the operating system uses hard drive space for what they call what's called swap space, based on the amount of memory that you have in your computer. So if you have 3 gigabytes of RAM, and it's needing at least that, if not more, for swap space on a hard drive, you know, it's all of a sudden this space is disappearing very quickly.
What size hard drive would you recommend?
Well, it sounds like you don't have a lot of data, and you could get something like a thumb drive or a USB little drive that I've seen them on sale for now less than $20.
I have a 2 gigabyte thumb drive.
Yep.
I just haven't used it.
Yeah, so you could use that one. That would probably be more than adequate for you. But for less than $20, you can buy 8 gig thumb drives, which is usually more than enough for most people. And you'll plug it in your USB port. You just have to when you're running backups of your data, and I'm not sure what you're using, mm-hmm. you just need to know that you're pointing it to that drive
mm-hmm.
when you're copying files.
And good luck. Thank you. Thank you very much for calling. Things should go a lot faster for you
Correct.
Right now. That's probably something other people, information that a lot of other people could use as well.
A lot of people don't realize that swap space comes into play, and especially with
yeah.
how they're shipping systems with more and more RAM,
yeah.
that it's eating up hard drive space without you even knowing it.
Thanks, Kathy. Joe in Wausau, we're on to you now. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I've got a beef with Microsoft right now. I just finished building myself a brand new Windows Vista Media Center PC. I put Vista Ultimate 64 on it, and I had it scan for the digital TV channels, which on the box it says ATSC capable, and it found all the programming channels, but Vista does not offer guide listings for the sub-channels, which kind of makes the software completely useless. As though I can view the sub-channels, I can't see what's on it, and therefore I can't set it up to record anything. I've looked on the Internet for third-party programs. There are dozens of third-party programs that are out there, but they don't work as well as Vista Media Center. But all of the third-party software offers guide listings for ATSC sub-channels. So my question is to you is, why doesn't Vista offer something that free software offers, and are they planning on fixing this, or am I actually going to have to buy Windows 7 to get the functionality that I thought Windows Vista would give me?
Now, have you, when you said you've looked for, you know, solutions, have you communicated at all with any of, they have what are called MVPs, people that works, that are certified professionals that work with different versions of the operating system, different, you know, applications that Microsoft has developed. Have you looked at any of their resources?
Yeah, most of them said that that Microsoft doesn't offer guide listings for the sub-channels on Vista because of some sort of contract with Zaptuit, the programming people they offer. They only contracted Vista to work with analog stations, and they said they've contracted Windows 7 to work with digital stations, but not Vista. So Vista only works with analog TV, even though it says on the box that it's capable of working with digital TV. So I don't know if there's any way you know of maybe importing guide data from a third-party source or...
Yeah, you'd have to you know, do searches online for, you know, finding, I guess, a plugin, if you want to call it, for what you're looking for. Yeah, I went through that with, and I've told this story a couple of times where, you know, Microsoft has their movie player, and also, you know, for creating videos, but, you know, my daughter wanted to show it to. Or actually, as my son wanted to show it to his class and needed to burn a DVD, and you could only create a DVD that would work on the computer, but not for a video player. So, you know, my beef was, why would you do that? You know, you want to create a video on a computer, but you also want to show it to people so they can watch it on TV. Well, I had to spend $30 to buy a program that would actually take the video file that was created using Microsoft software and make it playable on a DVD player to watch on TV, which is what they would use in their class. So I know exactly how you feel. It's and you know, for them to you know it's almost like they need to make their language better when they're, you know, putting their products out there, because it's almost deceiving. A friend of mine bought a program for working with ringtones and, you know, allowing him to put basically whatever he wanted onto his phone. But because it says in fine print, of course, which is very difficult to see, that the carrier that he was using would not allow that to work. So he spent $50 on doing something he wanted, but it was only because of his cell carrier that it would not allow the content to be played.
No.
So I hear your your displeasure, frustration, and all I could say is, you know, if you can find a third party to patch the solution now, that'll work for you. That would be great. It's going to cost, maybe it'll cost some, but at least it might be a solution versus, you know, do you want to be having to upgrade to Windows 7, you know, with, you know, at a cost. So
well, there you have it, Joe. Good luck. Thank you for calling. And Ron and Phillips, we turn to you next. Hi, Ron.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
A quick question for you, actually a couple of them. I did some research on your website, actually, and did some things. My computer's very slow in starting up, and, you know, it's kind of having some problems, you know, just basically shutting down, et cetera. So in the research, the registry, you know, cleaning up the registry seemed pretty important in everything
right.
I saw. And I see they sell a lot of registry cleanup software. Is that stuff actually, you know, worth purchasing? I mean, or is there a way to do it without that?
There are a number of, if you want to call them, free programs out there that work well. Let's see, there's, Easy Cleaner is one that I've used, and I always recommend when you're doing stuff for cleaning the system registry,
mm-hmm.
always make sure you make a backup of your data files.
Oh, okay.
You know, so that if for whatever reason your system starts to hiccup or burp and is not cooperating, you know, at least you've got your data files off if you get to the point where you might actually have to reinstall the operating system.
Okay.
But what these registry cleaners do is they go through and look for almost like what are called orphan references to programs that might have been uninstalled or updates that weren't really updated properly. In other words, you know, you updated one version of software to another and there are still references to the earlier version and it's not really on your system.
Mm.
And a number of other things. And what happens is the registry cleaners go through and they get rid of these wasteful points of reference so that your system no longer dwells or thinks about them or deals with them, and it makes the reaction time of your system better.
Okay.
The other thing is if you do a disk cleanup just within the Windows operating system, and they've had that function for a long time, is it gets rid of a lot of temporary files. It's almost like reshuffling a card deck, and it gets rid of a lot of wasted space. So
is that like defragmentation, or is it different?
Well, if you don't do the disk cleanup before doing disk defragmentation, you're moving around a lot of useless files to maximize your system's performance.
Okay, so there is actually a function that's called disk cleanup.
Right. Which version of the operating system do you have?
I have XP right
now. Okay, so if you go into start, and then programs and accessories and system tools, you'll see disk cleaner or disk cleanup referenced.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll go through and look for and remove. It'll have checkboxes, and it'll tell you how much is out there.
Okay.
And so that's something that I would do before actually doing a defragmentation.
Okay, so that first, and then mm-hmm. And there's
right.
another thing I saw out there, which is called a check disk.
Right.
Is that another thing that's worth doing once in a while?
Or? Well, what that'll do is if you're having problems with bad sectors on a hard drive,
mm-hmm.
It may do some repair where it marks those off as to not be used.
Okay.
If you do a search on CHKDSK,
mm-hmm.
The command, it's fairly popular online. You should be able to find some really good, you know, references to that. And then if you remember one of the earlier callers, if you haven't done this to your system where you resize the recycle bin.
Yeah, so, okay, the recycle bin. I've
right.
resized, I think I have resized both. That was from a previous program I listened
right.
to, the recycle
yep.
bin. And,
yeah.
And I just want to ask Vista. You made a comment right at the opening of the show about the Vista software. I did just buy a new computer with Vista, and I actually convinced Dell to send me the XP software, and I have that for free.
Right.
Would I be better off actually installing the XP operating system over the Vista?
Well, you need to make sure, you know, they may have shipped it to you, but did they ship it complete with all the device drivers and so forth?
Yeah, they believe they did. They've given me everything, you know, for it, because I actually called and you know, said that I heard that, you know, they were going to be upgrading to, you know, to the version 7 of the operating system. Mm-hmm. And so they did, you know, and that Vista was going to go away, so they did agree to send it to me. So,
well, I'll tell you, if it was me personally and I went and I bought a computer today, and I was given the option for XP Pro versus Vista, I personally would redo the system before I got started on it.
No.
So, you know, some people may not have the wherewithal to want to go through the time and effort to do that. And I remember doing it for my son's laptop and, you know, taking all his data off and then redoing it and making sure he had all the device drivers. You know, it was not a small task. It took, you know, an experienced person close to 3 hours to get it going, you know, because you have to pay attention to all the, you know, everything that's installed for Vista needs to be reinstalled with a different operating system. So you just have to make sure you have all the device drivers, including for the printer, and anything that's going to talk to that computer, you're taking a step back.
Hmm.
So
Be careful.
Yeah, you just have. It's going to take time. It's not something you kind of wave a magic wand over and it's done. You have to pay attention throughout the whole process.
Good luck. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Bob in Franklin, Tennessee, emailed us and is unable to download updates to Windows Vista. He says, I've searched all the news groups and have found nothing that works. Any suggestion outside of reloading Windows?
So he's not able to run any kind of updates on Windows Vista.
Right, and he's gone through the news groups and hasn't found anything that works. So he wonders, is there anything outside of reloading Windows?
If it's something that he's interacting with, boy, there's a couple of things that I would try. You know, sometimes it's not searching in the right place, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're not searching in the right place for some of the answers, you may actually never find them. So doing a Google search to me is not, you know,
not
a complete search. If you go to infostar.com and you go to the Virus Info Center page on the very top part of forums, and where I would start, one of them would be the MSK base or the Microsoft's knowledge base, and query their system about Vista unable to update or the problem that he's having. The other are some of the other forums that are online. There are a number of different acronyms, but the ones that begin with MS for Microsoft are the ones that you're going to want to focus on to do some of the searches. And those are typically the people that are doing this on a daily basis within their work environments that are going to be posting answers to those kind of problems. The other is that there's sometimes I've found where people have actually written scripts to almost circumvent the issue that's going on in your system and just underneath the OS correct the problem for you. And the people are nice enough to actually give you the instructions of how to exactly to create some of the scripts, save them on your computer, run them, and they fix the problems. Where I've had Microsoft Defender, for whatever reason, doing a brand new install and then it not allowing it to update. Well, it's the same thing as the operating system. You're trying to communicate with a Microsoft website or service and saying, update my computer, and it won't work. You create the script, run it on your system, and it does its thing, and then all of a sudden it works like magic. So they're out there.
Chris in Burlington, it's your turn. Hi, Chris. Thank you for calling.
Hi, guys. Welcome back, Peter. Hope you had a good vacation.
It was great.
Good.
Thank you.
I'll run three things down real quick because I can see you're getting close to a break here. Sleep mode. I've had problems with that myself because I think it was tied up to a wireless mouse where manually I could put it into sleep mode, but if I walked away, it was like doing some kind of little scrolling thing, and it wouldn't go into sleep mode. Hmm. So I don't know if that would be helpful.
And those are fairly popular. Yeah, you know, if you walk into a store and you want to buy a mouse and a keyboard, good luck trying to find one that's actually hardwired. It's a minority.
I've got Vista, and I'm having a problem doing a defrag in safe mode. Now, I don't, you know, actually, it's just something that I thought I would try because of something I heard you say in the past. So
it just
won't run in a safe mode. So I was wondering if you could give me any kind of a hint on that.
So it actually, you know, you try to run it, and what does it come back and say?
I don't even get a response. I'll go ahead and click on defrag, you know, in safe mode, and you know, I might get a little bit of like what's the equivalent to the hourglass kind of thing for a second, but nothing happens. And I've tried it a couple of times.
Have you tried running it in regular desktop mode?
Sure, it'll run like that.
Yeah, it might actually be something that Microsoft shut off and made it not work. I don't know. Okay. You know, it's possible.
All right. Yeah, just curious.
I'm not really sure on that. I'd have to look that up. Or if it's not something that, you know, it's something that should work, there might be, for whatever reason, something that Microsoft still has that's running interference, or there might be a patch that's available to that. So, you know, going back to using that, you know, this would be a perfect example of using Microsoft's knowledge base, is going back, selecting the Vista operating system that you're using, and, you know, putting in won't defrag in safe mode, and, you know, seeing what comes up. Because what they do is the way they deal with feedback from end users, you know, users like you and I, is, you know, if there's a technical issue, they'll post what they think is an initial fix to the problem, and as time goes on, they update it with more and more and more updates as related to what, you know, other people have you know, interacted and given them feedback with. And you'll usually see, you know, the date that it was last posted. So if you know that it's a problem that is ongoing and fairly popular, you usually see pretty recent, you know, times that it was posted or updated.
Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
And I got one more comment about, you know, using Microsoft's knowledge base and the solutions that they post. Sometimes they can be very time-consuming because they may give you many, many options. So you almost have to have your own little checklist and say, okay, I did this one and it didn't work. Then you do the next one, and it didn't work. And I've had some that had like 10 different options to try, and I got to have to do number 10.
Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking computers with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, Larry Mueller here. Let's go to Norma in Madison next. Norma, hi. Thank you for waiting.
Hi. You're welcome. I'm pretty much a novice as far as computers go, except for email, but I have Windows XP, and on the My Computer screen, I have icons for removable disks, G-H-I-J-K, and now I know how to correctly remove the flash drives, but these must be left over from a long time ago. How do I get those off? I tried left-clicking, right-clicking. I found an eject on another screen, and that didn't work. How do I get those icons off?
So there are icons on your desktop?
Yeah, on the My Computer screen.
Okay, so you've tried to right mouse. Are there red? Well, let's take it a step back. If you go into My Computer, are there red X's through those drives?
No, I'm on the My Computer screen, and there are no red X's.
But there are references to those drives.
Yeah, it just has the icon, and it says removable disk G, next one is H, next one is I, J, K. Now, okay. When I put another flash drive in recently, it goes to L, and I know how to remove it so the L doesn't stay on there, but I can't get rid of these others. I assume I don't need them.
Just wondering where those other drives came up, because if you're usually, if you add a thumb drive or a flash drive like you made reference to,
mm-hmm.
it's usually the next available drive in the sequence. So in other words, if a person, your floppy drives would technically be A and B, the C drive is your hard drive, the D drive could be a hard drive or it could be a DVD or CD player, and then the E drive would be your next, you know, reference for a drive. So if you put in your flash or thumb drive, that would come up as the E drive. And what you're saying is you've got reference to five additional removable drives.
Right.
In there.
I have the E and the F, but the icon symbol is different on those than it is from the G through K.
Okay. So what happens when you right mouse click on them? What is it?
Let's see what happens. I can. It just, you can open, explore, search, scan. Oh, yeah, the eject was on there, but the eject didn't do anything.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know if it, you know, usually those disappear when those, you know, drives are gone. So somewhere in your system, it's making reference to those removable disks
okay.
as something that is somehow attached.
Okay.
So, but they're actually not there.
Yes, they're not there.
You're telling me that if you were to go to write to them, it would probably tell you that it couldn't copy a file to it.
I haven't tried doing that.
So the is this a desktop computer or a laptop? Or?
It's a desktop.
Okay. Have they always been there?
No. Frankly, I haven't looked at the screen for some time, but I don't believe they've always been there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, the only way for, you know, would be to remove those. First of all, they're technically not really, you know, causing any trouble other than that they're there.
Yeah.
Because you're telling me that when you do put in your flash or thumb drive, it makes reference to it, which is good. But if you wanted to go through the effort of trying to find out how to remove them with the computer, you know, making or pointing reference to them, you would have to, you know more about the operating system and also the computer hardware. Sometimes there might be stuff going on with the firmware. That's not typical. In using the operating system in Windows, you'd have to almost play with trying to remove it or not link up to that drive and reboot your system. And it's not really something, you know, to go over on the show because we'd spend a lot of time trying to see if it worked. So I guess my recommendation is it's not really, you know, causing an issue.
Yeah.
So I would probably just live with it.
Just live with it. And thanks a lot for calling, Norma. Appreciate your call. And we have an email from Bob who has a Sony Mavica digital camera that uses 3.5-inch mini CDs to store pictures. These cameras need a finalization process
mm-hmm.
to use the disc.
Right.
Therefore, I've had several discs that failed during finalization. Is there some program or process that can retrieve the pictures from those discs? You have about 25 discs that failed for various reasons, and some were used by students in a school.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's, I know what he's talking about. So
he
trying to recover. See, DVD recorders, you know, that's how when you're recording a movie, you have to go through this finalization in order for the disc to be usable to be viewed. I don't know of anything offhand, but that doesn't mean that something does not exist. But, usually you know, because these are mechanical devices, you know, if you do the finalization as you're recording, you know, to the media, and then you run finalization, usually you're okay. But if you don't run it right away, you could have compatibility issues because drive speeds may vary, you know, running interference and so forth. So, which means that you could potentially lose, you know, everything that you've recorded or tried to record.
Tried to record.
So my only suggestion is to try and go, you know, search on the internet and just work at trying to, you know, read the responses and try and see if you can find something that would actually allow you to recover that.
Yeah.
Because it's unfortunate that it's almost like when you're recording to the media, it's creating this giant buffer, but it's still working with the media to create the actual data files. And then it's saying, okay, you need to take this extra step called finalization to really make it the package that you want. And that's what's missing. Yeah. So now trying to get another program to read that interim, you know, step is, boy, that could be very tough.
Oh. Jane in Milwaukee, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Jane.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
I've got a problem with a program that I think my husband downloaded from the CNN webpage, which is our homepage. He downloaded something called Pipeline, which I think enables you to watch video snippets of news pieces.
Okay.
And that was probably a year ago, and we can't get rid of it. It won't go away. we've gone to Control Panel and deleted the program. We've tried System Restore and a couple of other things, but what it does now, every time we start up our computer, gives us a whole bunch of error messages, something about viewing the certificate, and if you click out of that about 10 times, it'll finally stop doing that. But
okay.
It seems like it's trying to start, and we won't let it, and it's so frustrating.
Right.
How can we get rid of it?
Which version of the operating system do you have?
We have XP Pro.
Okay. Do you have a lot of icons in your system tray that are in the lower right-hand side of your screen after your system starts up?
We do, and one of them is this CNN pipeline.
Right. Okay. what you can do is if you click on Start and then click on Run and then type in MSCONFIG and hit the Enter key. So that stands for Microsoft.
Okay.
It's short for Microsoft Configuration.
Okay.
So, and then hit the Enter key, you'll see a bunch of tabs, and to the right is a Startup tab. And if you click on that, and what I would do is you could basically eliminate all of them and then put them back in one by one until you get your system the way you want.
Okay.
So basically, right, you know, create yourself a checklist. But
okay.
you might find an actual reference to the pipeline program that you're talking about. So what's going on is when your system starts up, it's pointing to, you know, that program and some others that you really don't need to be using or
right.
having start up in your system tray, and it's running interference and slowing down your system, and, you know, you're seeing all those error messages. The other thing you could do is if you go to infostar.com and click on tips on the left-hand side,
mm-hmm.
If you were to probably do a search on that page for Windows Startup, you'll probably, I don't remember which tip number it is, but I've written a paragraph that talks about how to help optimize your Windows Startup and point to some good references out there.
That's great. That's great. Would this have anything to do with what I heard on an earlier call, the registry cleaner?
Yeah, actually, the MS config would help you a lot because it's really in your startup. It would also, the registry cleaner would also, you know, clean it up. But
okay.
by you getting rid of it also helps. And some of the registry cleaners may not make an effect on stuff that you really don't need in your system tray because it's assuming
okay.
that it's in there. That you want it there. It will eliminate the bad references, but there may be things in there that you really don't need to have. Things that, like an antivirus program, you don't want to remove, okay?
Right.
But maybe reference to some Adobe program that is, you know, helping you with files for Adobe Reader. You don't really need that loaded because, you know, unless you're looking at Adobe files all the time, why would you want it there?
Right.
So,
right.
You know, antivirus, if you've got MS Defender for spyware checking or something else, you're going to want to leave those in your system tray. But,
sure.
You know, references to other programs like Pipeline and so forth, you don't want those, so then you uncheck the boxes. But
right.
They're... sometimes they're not as clear cut, you know, to you know exactly what program it is. So that's why have a checklist, you know which ones you checked off and put them back on if you think they need to be there.
And good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your personal computer today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Glad to have you listening in. Lines are all filled and lots of emails here. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Pete, before we take more calls, you have your top 10 list that we always go through about this time. What have you got for us today?
Try to go through them quickly. If you go to InfoStar.com, click on Current Top 10 or the Top 10 Archives and scroll down to today's date, they're all there. This first one is a resource for I've always loved home theater systems and, you know, the more how these evolve, but it's a resource for home theater systems. Got a lot of stuff there. It's called HomeTheaterShack.com. This next one is for user manuals, user guides for equipment like mobile phones, cameras, system boards, monitors, software, and more. It's called usersmanualguide.com. So it's all one word. This next one, another resource for sending photos, videos to more than 50 online social communities, email distribution lists, blogs, photo sites, and other popular web destinations in one step. And it's called Shozu, Shozu.com. So it's all in one step. You can do all that. This next one is a online service for real-time short messaging that works over multiple networks and devices for family, friends, and coworkers to communicate and stay connected through an exchange of a quick, frequent answer to one simple question. What are you doing? And it's called Twitter, TWITTER.com. This next one is allowing you to upload photos automatically from your digital camera to your computer or favorite photo site with by wireless, and it's called iFi. So it's EYE.FI.
Cool.
That's the website. The next one is a free utility for remotely verifying a port is open or closed. So it's useful for people who wish to check, see if a server is running or a firewall is blocking certain ports, and it's called canyouseeme.org. For people looking at new phones, this resource is called slash phone, S-L-A-S-H, phone.com. A resource that was put up by Information Please, which is a company that focuses on reference information. An online almanac, dictionary, encyclopedia, useful homework resource, and it's called factmonster.com. So it's kind of kid-friendly. I was looking at tankless water heaters, so I did some research, and I was like, okay, what's a good resource for that? Well, tanklesswaterheaterguide.com. And it's got all the details on how they work, choosing one, installation, maintenance, manufacturer's info, and even a 3-minute video on YouTube to help explain more about that. And it actually tells me why I don't need one.
Ah.
Because, you know, you figure it out for yourself. But for me personally, I've decided I'm just going to...
Don't need one.
Just get a different, you know, regular one. And then this last one is migration data from around the world and interactive tools to provide you with easy access to immigration data and the ability to generate charts, and it's called migrationinformation.org.
All right.
So that's a top 10. Now, the other thing is, Larry, you know, I was thinking back, and we've got a lot of people that emailed us, and I was thinking, of all the systems I've touched, I've never had one that's had a multiple card reader. And what's interesting is one of the callers that had the woman that had the problem with or saying, hey, there's all these removable drives, it's because probably because she has one of those 5-in-1 readers or multiple card readers, so that it's really sitting there and saying, I have a removable drive for an SD card or an XD card or whatever those readers are. So it's just sitting there waiting for her to insert, you know, a card, and it'll reference it.
So leave them in there. Don't
leave
try
them in
to,
there.
And...
just they're not hurt. Like I said, they're probably not hurting anything, so leave them alone. And then the other one is related to the receipts, you know, sending back a receipt. If you look in under the tools and options, you can answer the question as always send one, ask me, or never. So the end user that's receiving the emails, the recipients of from that gentleman that called earlier, is really the person should be setting up as ask me and then making the choice whether or not to send it. And probably what's happened is they may have made those options as never.
Never.
So you'll never see the question asked.
Gotcha. Let's go to – so he should check his own computer at work then because
– That's correct.
He
yes.
emailed at work and
didn't get one. So
he's probably having never on his.
Inadvertently, that question got asked at one time. And when you say never, then that's what
that's
it's
never.
Doing. Never.
Harold in Superior, we're on to you. Hi, Harold.
Well, good afternoon. I've got so many questions, and I know there's too many people waiting here, so I'll be brief. my hard drive crashed. It was foolishness on my part. I shut it off without shutting everything down. And I had a reason, but it wasn't good enough. I can't even find a C prompt or a D prompt or anything. I've run sector programs, various hard drive programs. So many of them are so technical that, my gosh, you got to be a genius to figure out what button to push on them. It's just amazing how technical they are. And I'm wondering if you have a particular software that you'd recommend that, you know, if you can't find the drive C, is there any way to recover that? And do you know of any software you might recommend trying? I've tried SpinWrite and half a dozen others, but...
Well, what I do is if a computer's having a problem reading the main drive and there's data on it and you need to gain access to it, to me, the best thing to do is to take the drive out of the system and you attach it to another computer as the secondary drive and see if you can read it. The fact that you can't boot up your system with the operating system doesn't mean that the data on the drive is lost. It just means that the operating system's having a problem communicating with the computer to bring it up and allow you to use it in a normal way. But it still may be usable enough that you could gain access to the data. And as long as you know where that's kept or stored, then... if you're able to bring that up as a second drive in a workable computer, you can point to it and transfer those files, whether it's to a DVD or a CD or a thumb or flash drive. That's what I would try to do in an attempt to recovery. When you try to repair a system that's got problems, there are other options, you know, to try and make Windows, you know, bootable or usable again.
Right.
But when it's the data that you're really interested in trying to rescue, you need to have the operating system available to you. And the only way to have that is to attach it to another system so you can look at it.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. We have Tim in Duluth. My spouse recently changed our internet provider, upgrading from dial to DSL, and we changed internet providers. And in the process of installing this change, we encountered some problems. So my spouse hired a Microsoft tech to help clean things up. In the process, we lost our entire email archives and a tremendous amount of data and personal correspondence and pictures. We were told that there may have been a large file that corrupted the Outlook mail system, and we're given no options for recovering these data. Are we out of luck completely, or is there a possibility we might recover our lost treasures?
Well, if you're using Outlook, it writes a file called a .pst that contains all that data in it. If you use programs like Outlook Express, they write separate folders for every component of your, you know, your email and so forth. So really trying to, locate the version of that .pst, and if you can find it, and then trying to run, there might be a repair utility that might allow you to actually be able to, you know, repair it if it's been corrupted, or to try and install it in another system and then trying to, you know, basically point to that to open it up and see if it works. Those are really the options. I had someone call me earlier, I believe it was last week, that had a similar situation where their schedule was getting truncated and they really wanted to have their schedule detail from months prior, and it was getting truncated off. And I said, unless you have a backup in time of that .pst file, which has all of your data from Outlook,
right,
you know, you really don't have an option. You know, what are you going back to? Where is that data? Well, it's in that .pst, and unless you have earlier versions that you can go back to, there really is no way to recover from that.
So, yeah.
In looking at backup programs and backup systems and external drives, there's a key thing for people to realize and understand the difference. There are backup systems that will make backups and write over your earlier backups. There are other backup systems that will save the changes to edits. So in other words, if you use a file frequently and you want it to save, you know, edits that you make on Monday and Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and even for the months prior, there are programs or systems that do that. And, you know, just being aware that those differences do exist. In other words, different restore points give you access to older data.
Yeah. John and Kakana, to your turn now. Hi, John.
Hi. See, I have a irritating problem with my Windows Mail program, and we have I got a Windows Vista, and Internet Explorer 8, and Windows Mail 6. And what happens is when I open up Windows Mail, and the program opens up, then I open up an email, and if this email has a link to, say, another newspaper or something, then we open up that link to the newspaper. Then when I get done on that link and I go up into the right-hand corner and click on the X to close that window closes, and I'm back to my Google screen. And the open email and the Windows Mail have all gone down to my taskbar. And then I have to go down to the taskbar and open or close each one of those windows individually from the taskbar. And, all the other computer or the programs or Windows programs we've had, you know, the Windows XP and the Windows 89 and all their associated Internet Explorers and mails, you just kept, you know, closing the windows up there on the upper right-hand corner until you got back where you wanted. And on this one now with the Vista and that, you know, once you leave, you click on a link to a different newspaper or a different site, you know, all those windows everything you got open behind you goes back down to the taskbar. And I've, you know, looked around on the Internet Explorer sites and some other email sites trying to find some answers, and everything out there relates to, like, Internet Explorer 7 or Windows XP. And I was just wondering if you have any ideas about this.
Right. Internet Explorer 8 is fairly new. One thing to try, I don't know where the setting is, but to when you're clicking from your mail program, is to tell it to not open in a new window so that you're in an existing window. And that might, you know, work.
Weird way.
It would be in your mail system when it's probably under options or tools.
Okay.
But what's going on is when you're clicking on a link within the mail, it's forcing to open up another session.
Okay.
So what'll happen is if you tell it to not force a window to open up another session and you already have Internet Explorer 8 running, it will run it in that session.
Okay.
So if there's a page that's up on your browser, it'll force it that link to open up within that screen.
Okay. So, one more time, what did you say the message should say, or it should tell me to stay on the same page, or?
Yeah, what you're doing is, right now, the setting is that when you're in your email and you get pointed to a web page to click on, you're telling it to open up the browser to a new window.
Okay, so I want to look for something that says stay in the same window. Or
right. Yeah. Same window or same session.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. And Bob in Boulder Junction, on to you. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Hi.
Bought a new PC using XP, which I was surprised to be able to find. But I want to move my information from my old computer to the new one. Is this a good idea? And how about viruses and other problems or defects?
Okay. Well, if you want to move the information from your old system to your new one, there are a couple of different ways to do it. One would be, you know, to record it to your data files to a CD, or if your old system can write to CDs or DVDs, you know, that's an option. Another one would be to use a flash drive, which you could also use for backups, so that would be a good thing.
Yeah.
So not only would you copy it to your flash or thumb drive, but then after you copied it to your new system, you'd still have it to use, you know, down the road for backups. The other way is to have a cable between the two, but that's not as popular because it's not as useful. Once you use it, you're done with it.
Yeah.
And it would probably cost as much as buying a thumb or a flash drive, and those you can use over and over again. As far as, you know, what's in the data and being concerned about, you know, viruses or Trojans, is if you have your old system protected, or if you haven't, you know, running a scan on it prior to, you know, moving your old files over to your new ones would probably be a good idea. You could use online services to do that, or you could download from the internet different programs to do that. There's if you go to the InfoStar Virus Info Center page and scroll down to AV Help, there's a whole bunch of links that I put up there for free antivirus programs that you could download and install on your old system and run scans on it just to make sure.
Good luck. Thank you. Jeff emailed, I know a website where I want to download all the PDF files, but it would be tedious to click on every link. Is there any way to download all the files at once?
The only way would be is if they gave you, you know, a zipped version of all those PDFs. Because what they have on that website is each individual file posted. So they'd have to package them to you, you know, in one file to do that. So the other way is, you know, you'd have to, you know, you just have to keep clicking on those files and get multiple streams going. There really isn't
there's any other way to do it.
Yeah, it's the author or the owner of that site has to enable you to do that.
Steve in Wausau, hi to you.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Just starting to investigate this and just wanted to get your opinion regarding if I get a high-speed internet. Right now I have dial-up, but if I get a high-speed internet, there's a thing called Magic Jack on the market, and I've seen a bunch of different versions of it, and you plug it into your USB port in the back, and then you plug your telephone in there, and apparently you can make just local and long-distance calls without being charged for them based on the fact that you've got a high-speed internet. And what do you know about that?
I know what you're talking about. I think they even sponsored a college bowl, so they seem to be fairly popular. I personally haven't had any experience using them or any reason to purchase their product. Doesn't mean it doesn't work, but if it was something that I was interested in, I would do what I call my due diligence and research and see if it's actually valid. One is, checking your high-speed internet provider that you're choosing, and then along with that knowledge, going online and probably going to some of the popular review sites. One would be CNET.com, CNET.com,
okay.
And they have a review page or a review component of their website. Another one would be called ePinions, EPINIONS.com, and then going to, if it's a direct purchase or if it could be a purchase through, another retailer, or try and look for, just try and search for, feedback sites other than CNET or ePinions. To see if you can find any comments about it as related to your high-speed internet carrier, if there's any compatibility issues or if there are any problems with setup or that it works or it doesn't work. Okay. Does it promise? Does it deliver on the promise?
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks for calling. Deb in Madison wonders if you've ever heard of a cordless phone interfering with a laptop with home wireless network. She's got her cordless home landline, she's in front of her laptop, the laptop, it gets a blue screen or something.
It can because, the wireless and cordless phones and the wireless networks are transmitting and could be in similar, ranges where they're running interference with each other. There are resources out there to probably help you troubleshoot, finding a solution to that. Could be part of it proximity to the base unit, so the strength is stronger.
Yeah.
The location of the router could be an issue. But there are, probably a CNET site would be a good site to use because they're a tech resource. And there on my tips page, I list a number of home networking or wireless networking resources that are out there. DSLreports.com is another one that would be useful for trying to work through a solution.
Pete, always a pleasure. You'll be back March 2nd.
Always great, Larry.
We'll do it again. Peter
Thanks.
Green, Pete, thank you very much. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. And, boy, I'm sorry we didn't get about 50 emails here.
Could be on all day and night.
Yeah, it could be on all day and night. But we can't do that. He'll be back March 2nd. Tomorrow, Bill Scheckler, Dr. Bill Scheckler, gives us an update on flu. And then we'll also talk about adult daycare in Wisconsin. Stay with us. Lots in store.